Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Well, it's a beautiful day in America, isn't it? With the Republicans getting it done last night, including the U.S. Senate. Now, of course, Donald Trump looks like he's got that thing won. John Curtis won fairly big, and John is with me right now by the telephone. Senator-elect John Curtis. How does that sound?
I love it, Andy. Thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
I was reading through your speech. You talk a lot about unity, strength. Unity creates strength. Tell us about what that means to you going forward now as senator-elect.
Well, I'll tell you, there's no better example of that than the Utah Republican Party. United, like, there's nothing we can't do. But if, you know, divided, then we're going to have problems. And if you've seen this as Republicans in the House struggle with that, if we can't find that unity amongst ourselves, then it makes it hard to get things done.
I'm happy to say, Senator, to be, I want to call you Senator right now. Not yet, I guess, but, let's see, 73.5% of the vote in Washington County went to you.
Wow. That makes me very happy.
Yeah, yeah. almost three quarters of the vote, 51,500 of us, plus voted for John Curtis to be our new senator. Of course, you're filling the, spot vacated by Mitt Romney. You know, there in Washington County in particular, there were a lot of people that weren't fond of Mitt Romney for some of his, let's just say more moderate beliefs. You've been tabbed as a moderate as well. Tell us what that means and how you're going to be different from Romney.
Yeah, well, so first of all, somebody needs to define moderate for me.
Yeah, seriously.
Right, because a moderate's probably somebody who just doesn't vote exactly like me, right?
Yeah.
And I think, people are always surprised because, you know, some people will call me a moderate. Then they look at my voting record and they say, wow, you're actually very conservative. And so nobody really knows what it means to be a moderate. So I think, you know, if people look close, they'll see in me somebody that is what I would call very traditional, what I call pioneer values, hard work, independence, freedom, family, faith. And that's what I've tried to make my hallmark. And I think as Washington County gets to know me better, that the reality of it is they're just getting to know me. I think as they get to know me better, they'll find that I do represent them and represent their values and want to make Washington, D.C. more like Washington County.
You are a Utah guy through and through, East Mill Creek area, Skyline High School.
Yeah,
mayor of Provo for a while. How do you talk about, you know, making Washington, D.C. like Washington County, making instilling some of the values of Utah into Washington, D.C.? How do you do that? What do you think needs to happen?
Well, I'll tell you, there's no louder value screaming at us than fiscal responsibility. And when you talk about a core Utah value and going back to our pioneer heritage, and a huge shout out to our state legislature who really does this well. And so the answer to your question is we need to model some of the things that we're doing here in Utah. And one of the things I've already started to talk to my Senate colleagues about is Utah's baseline budget. And in essence, what that is at the beginning of every legislative session, they agree. If they don't agree on a budget, they go on last year's budget. If we could implement that one thing in D.C., we could literally change the face of this deficit problem. Mm-hmm. Just that one simple fix. So, you know, we vote no on these budgets, but voting no is not enough. We need to do something substantially different to the foundation of the way we budget. And that's the idea that I've talked to all the candidates who want to be the leader in the Senate and told them that's my agenda. And hopefully I can get some support behind that.
We're talking with John Curtis, who won the Republican nomination for Senate. The Senate now is going to be red for the first time, which, by the way, you and I both went to BYU, so red isn't always a good thing. But anyway, it is going to be red, which means there will be more Republicans than Democrats in the Senate to support President-elect Donald Trump. What does that mean to you?
It's huge. You know, I've been in the minority a lot of my 7 years back there, and that is so frustrating. But I did have some overlap with President Trump, and particularly when we were able to do reconciliation and get tax reform. And I'll just tell you, right now, the country is screaming for fixes at the border, for fixes with the economy.
Yeah.
And having that Senate is so critical, because when we didn't have the Senate is when President Biden had that kind of runaway spending that we couldn't stop. And so not only the Senate with the presidency, and we'll see how the House goes. We may have all three. It's a little hard to predict that right now. We'll know in the upcoming hours, but that would be an amazing thing.
What are some of the unique things about Utah that you have your eye on that you want to address as on a national stage? What are some of the unique things you're looking at?
Well, I think Utah does energy right, and I'm so impressed with the innovation. You know, so we have our traditional energy sources, but we've also got this amazing innovation. I'd point to Beaver, where they've got geothermal going. There's enough geothermal potential in Beaver to power 2 million homes.
Wow.
And the innovation that's coming out of Utah on energy is really exciting. And I just have this ambition for Utah to lead the country and literally lead the world in energy innovation.
And one of the things you've done during the course of your career is you've attempted to address climate change and address, you know, a lot of Republicans, a lot of conservatives go, you know what, they're not going to listen to me. I'm not talking to them. You've actually said, I'm going to talk to these people and see if we can find some middle ground.
Yeah, and not only middle ground, but to show them that Republicans' answers are actually better answers.
Hmm.
And, you know, when I started doing this, it felt like, you know, if you wanted to talk climate, you had to find something in the Green New Deal you could support. And the reality of it is Republicans have a host of ideas that we like, but also the lower emissions. I think they actually lower more emissions than our counterparts. Nuclear, I mentioned geothermal, hydro, you know, even far cleaner fossil fuels. The natural gas coming out of the Uinta Basin is 40% cleaner than Russia. Wow, we could lower emissions by exporting natural gas, right? And so Republicans were not talking about these things. They were just telling everybody what we didn't like. And I've been really proud. We've been able to change not just the dialogue in Utah, not just the dialogue in the United States, but literally around the world about a conservative approach to energy policy that makes sure we keep prices affordable, we keep them low, but we also reduce emissions. And Utah is at the center of that, and that's a big deal.
I think there's this misconception out there that if you're a conservative and a Republican, that you don't care about the planet and polluting and everything is okay with you. And that's not true at all, is it?
No, and that's actually what motivated me to start this. I knew Utahns were at core. This will offend a lot of your listeners. They're the original environmentalists. They don't like to be called environmentalists.
Yeah.
But at our core, we care deeply about the earth and we want to leave it better than we found it. And we just were not articulating that. And I think that's why this movement's been so successful. Right now, the Conservative Climate Caucus is one of the largest caucuses, and it's all Republicans leaning into this issue in Washington, D.C., and that's what's changing the narrative.
Talking with John Curtis, who has won the nomination to be a senator representing the state of Utah, filling Mitt Romney's seat. John, I know you have to go in a minute, in just a minute, but I want you to real quickly, if you can run me through yesterday and last night, what your evening was like.
Well, it was special. I'm just going to say it was a really fun night. We did it in Provo, and you mentioned that's where I was mayor, and I just had a wonderful experience there. And we kind of did a nod to Provo. We did it at the rec center we built while I was mayor, and we had restaurants from Provo cater the food, and we had a Provo musician there, and Provo cookies and Provo, you know, drinks. And it was just really a fun night, and surrounded by friends and family and campaign workers. And then obviously to have the results come in and have everybody be part of that, it was a very special night for me.
John, I know you've got to go. I really appreciate you spending a few minutes with us, and I congratulate you on your victory.
Great.
And just so you know, John, anytime you want to come on the Andy Griffin Show down here in St. George, we'd love to have you anytime.
I'm going to take you up on that. Let's do this a lot. Thanks, Andy,
we'll
and thanks
it.
To your listeners. All right, best to you.
All right, take care. John Curtis, again, U.S. Senate winner. From the state of Utah, he will fill the seat vacated by Mitt Romney. We do have Celeste Malloy coming up here in just a minute. She was gonna try to listen in. Now she's on the road, and you know coverage could be spotty and stuff. But she was gonna try to listen in and join us on the air. I do have Stockton here. Stockton, tell me a little bit about your crazy day yesterday. We prepared to do a live show last night, and we did do a live show, but one of the problems with live shows is it's live and you a lot of times are waiting on content, and we ran into some issues last night, didn't we?
Yes. If you go to the Washington County clerk auditor, their whole page, they tell you, we will not have election results until after 8:30 p.m. And so here I am waiting until after 8:30 p.m. I had given a brief update during the halftime of the BYU basketball game yesterday.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll have plenty to talk about once Andy gets up on the air. And then 10:20 p.m., I'm on the air, and I'm like, I got jack. I mean, well, no, I had some stuff.
A little. You had a little.
I had a little. I had stuff had finally started trickling in from across the state, but I had nothing for Washington County or Iron County. And that was because there was a whole lot of people lining up at the Dixie Convention Center that who weren't registered to vote, and they just wanted to vote. Well, and there was a lot of people who just wanted to vote in person this year, I guess.
That's kind of one of the things Lisa Sandberg was saying. Was there were a lot of people there that maybe they had moved, so their address had changed. Maybe they'd gotten married, so their name had changed. So they had to go in and kind of do this kind of process of getting everything accurate so that they could vote. And she said there were a lot of people in that, I forget the word she used, but it was like this auxiliary line where they had to get stuff taken care of. You said your sister was one of them.
So my sister went in around, I believe it was like 3 p.m. So it was before the biggest surge of voters got into the line. But what happened was she wasn't registered. And so it took her about an hour and a half just to get into the booth. I mean, that's not like the worst wait on the planet, but it's still, it's longer than you would like it to be. And it makes me grateful for being able to mail in a ballot.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But yeah, I mean, after everything was all said and done, I didn't get my actual article done covering the state election results until around, oh my gosh, like 2 a.m.
Wow.
So I was like, I had that, and then I was just about to go to bed, and then around 3 a.m, I get a notification on my phone saying Associated Press declares Donald Trump as the winner. Yeah. I'm like, okay,
We'll just not sleep.
So, yeah, it was quite the morning, I'll say that. But yeah, I mean, it was certainly surprising. I thought it was gonna. It's funny. It was close, but I thought it was gonna be a lot closer, and clearly not. I mean, Trump won the battleground states, every single one of them, which is crazy, at least as of, you know, now.
Yeah, I think Wisconsin was the only kind of battleground-ish state that he didn't win. And every one of the others he won. And actually, a lot of them were by like 3 and 4%, which sounds like it's really close. But in election circles, that means, you know,
millions of votes.
A few hundred thousand votes.
So. And Pennsylvania was definitely, many have been saying Pennsylvania was the biggest surprise out of all of it.
Yeah, he got it. Just so you know, in the state, so this is just in Washington County, Trump got 74.72% of the vote. So 53,000 people voted for Trump in Washington County. Surprisingly to me, 16,000, almost 17,000 people voted for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. That guy everyone's kind of been talking about.
Lucifer Every Love.
Just in case, Every Love. He got 63 votes in Washington County.
Yeah.
So it'd be fun to set up an interview with somebody that actually voted for this person.
Well, there was a lot of people who really weren't satisfied with either candidate. And they're allowed to believe that.
Of course, John Curtis won the Senate seat handily in Washington County, 74% of the vote. And then we're hoping to hear from Celeste Malloy here shortly. She was driving to Ridgefield today from Cedar, and she was going to try to get in an area where she had a good signal on her phone, and she was going to call in. But Celeste won 70.5% of the vote. I know last night we reported it was kind of close. She actually won the that was before a lot of the counties, very conservative counties, had weighed in.
Right, I said that Washington and Iron County hadn't been there. Hadn't had their say yet, and last year during the special election it was the exact same thing. It was close, and then here comes Washington Iron flying full Malloy, and they
it's true. It's true. We are going to hear from Celeste Malloy here in a couple of minutes here on KBX. So again, she is driving so to Richfield, so she's trying to find a spot where she has a good signal. I know you start going up over I-70, and
yeah,
service is a little spotty. In southern Utah, so there was a lot of, I'm going to say, a much ado about Phil Lyman, and there were a lot of people, very vocal people, who wanted Phil Lyman right into Phil Lyman to win.
And he had a very large presence here in Washington County, for sure.
Yeah, I tried to explain to them, number one, we need to unite behind the Republican nominee. That was Spencer Cox. And I'm not a Cox fan. I told them, I'm not a Cox fan. I voted for Lyman in the primary, but he lost. So in my mind, okay, he lost. Let's get behind the guy that won, the Republican that won. Because if you dink around, you're going to end up, getting a Democrat elected, which is the last thing we want at this point.
Which wasn't the case this time, but, I mean, he did get third place in the state and he's a write-in candidate. And, of course, a write-in candidate was, I mean, I don't know. It's definitely one of the larger presences. No, it's not. I'm tired. that we've seen
largest presence.
One of the larger presences that we've
and yeah, he got 4,754 write-in votes, which is significant. Yeah,
it is.
But when you consider he wasn't on the ballot, pretty much his chances of actually winning were, I mean, there'd have to be a scandal for the for the incumbent for that to actually happen.
I mean, that's exactly what he was trying to pull off. So
okay, so it's funny, somebody just texted me and said, what did you miss? Cox is a Democrat. I disagree with you. In fact, there's a lot of misinformation about Spencer Cox. People say, well, he rejected the women in sports deal to outlaw that in Utah. Well, if you do a little research on that, you find out he rejected the original one because the way it was worded left Utah open to a lot of lawsuits. When he sent it back to legislature and they reworded it, he signed it into bill. I think a lot of people are like, oh, he's for letting, the transgenders play women's sports. He's actually not. He just is against Utah getting sued by transgenders. And once they fixed that bill, he signed it into law. I mean, there's plenty of things to not like about Spencer Cox. On a personal basis, he told me he was going to be on my show all the time back when he was running for governor 4 years ago. And he's been on twice in 4 years. So, that to me, that's kind of on a personal note. That's like, so you lied to me is what happened. But beside that, I still think, again, you got to unite behind the Democrat. And that's what that's what Washington County did. 66.8% of the vote.
You mean unite behind the Republican
candidate, okay. Spencer Cox got 66.81% of the vote in Washington County. 40,650 people voted for him. So, like I said, there are going to be some people mad about that, but that's the way it is. And I really believe Spencer is a conservative guy who maybe doesn't cross some of the bridges people want him to cross as far as the ultra conservative. He's done some, I mean, for him yelling during the whole delegation and all that stuff, and that was stupid. And he admits it was stupid and he's apologized, but it's not like we don't, some of us make a few mistakes along the way too. Mm-hmm. So, the good news is, I feel like the Republicans have taken the Senate, at least 51 seats. It's looking like around 53 or 54, which means there will be a majority in the Senate. And Utah was way ahead in the Republicans were way ahead in the House of Representatives too. Now a lot, I think there's like 50 or 75 or something that still have not been declared. But with the Republicans ahead by something like 50 seats, it looks like that we may have a majority in the House, the Senate, and the Republican President, Donald Trump.
Which, when was the last time that happened? Well, hang on.
I think that's Celeste. I think we got Celeste now. So, Celeste, are you there?
I'm here. I'm so sorry I was late calling in.
It's okay. I figured, between driving and everything, it's all right. But congratulations, by the way, on your victory last night.
Thank you.
Now, take me through yesterday a little bit. I think, first of all, I actually had someone say, well, Celeste must not care. I haven't seen any advertising. She must not really care about this. And I'm like, well, my impression is Celeste is too busy working to worry about the election that much. But that's my impression. Tell me about your election day, just kind of your experience yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday was a long day. So the thing that you can't explain to somebody until they run for office is what election days are like. It's too late to do anything to change it and too soon to have any answers. And so you just sort of spin your wheels a little bit on election day. And especially because it was so late last night before the state released results.
Yeah,
it ended up feeling like a long day. But it also felt a lot like 2016. You know, I went in very hopeful about what was going to happen with the presidential election and with the Senate. But you don't know. And then as those numbers start coming in and you see the state start stacking up, you get more and more hopeful. And then it was a late night that ended with Trump giving a victory speech. It felt a lot like 2016. And I woke up really excited this morning about what's going to happen in this country.
I'm with you. In fact, this sounds weird, but I kind of feel like they robbed me of some of the joy that I was going to feel with Trump winning, because when I went to bed and he was way ahead, I was like, well, who knows what might happen while I'm sleeping these 4 hours.
Yeah. So. I know it's scary now to sleep while they're still counting ballots, but I think America just needed this. We needed a clear win. We needed the popular vote and the electoral college count to be on the same side. We needed a call the night of the election. Everyone was sort of steeling themselves for a really long, ugly process, and it hasn't been like that, and I think it's good for us.
One of the things that I've actually asked everyone that is a kind of insider in this topic is the Democrats were just, right up until the very end, were screaming that Donald Trump was going to ruin the world, and it was going to be tyranny, he was a fascist, and all these things, and in my mind, I was like, were you guys not, like, cognizant back in 2016 to 2020 when he was president? Did any of that stuff that you're saying right now happen then? Because it didn't.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Do you know why they're thinking?
And he got elected in 2016, and there were protests in the streets in D.C. Yeah. And there were members of his cabinet who couldn't eat in restaurants because they would get shouted out and, run out. And so it's a little disingenuous, some of the hand-wringing, but I think it's good for all of us that this is such a clear victory, even for Democrats. I think it just means we can all move forward. We can all plan for the future instead of having to go through this long process of protests and denial that everybody was steeling themselves for. I kept saying I wish people had stopped talking about it because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, but I think we're on a good path.
So as a member of the House, elections come up quick for members of the House every 2 years. You've got to think about this thing. And of course, you're special because basically you had that extra one in there as well as you filled in for Chris Stewart. Yeah. Is it difficult to put elections out of your mind and do your job?
I don't even know. Today's the first day I've had to even ask myself that question. Basically had a 16-month cycle where I've been running the entire time.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I've had to contemplate how to do the job and not be on a ballot all the time. And actually, while we're on the topic, I want to quickly address the first thing you said. Somebody was worried that I didn't care because they weren't hearing much from me the last few weeks. I actually decided not to be really aggressive with this general. My Democrat opponent wasn't buying advertising and wasn't doing much campaigning. And that primary was so long and drawn out, I knew people had election fatigue, and I didn't want to continue to send things to them when they'd gotten so many from me. So I deliberately ran a low-key campaign, and I hope whoever was worried about that can forgive me. I knew the voters needed a little bit of a break. I knew they wanted to focus on presidential election and some of these other races, and I knew that mine was going to be okay. So I was thinking of the voters.
There was a method to your quietness. I like that. And certainly, you know, as we got close to the election, the national races got really, really loud and overbearing and tough to take. So I'm grateful.
I have a brother in Nevada and a brother in North Carolina, both of which are swing states. And both of them told me last Sunday that they would die happy if they never saw another political ad on their TV.
Yeah, they, you know, I was talking with our NBC News correspondent, and he said they really like to especially target sporting events because that's one of the few things we still watch commercials for because we're watching a live game. He says, you know, TV show, you're streaming it, you flip through the commercial, you don't even, he says, but if it's a sporting event, you're so tense, you're so into the game that you actually will watch the commercials. And so, yeah, every sporting event for the last, I don't know, 3 months has been, you know, political fair game. And I agree with your brother. It'll be nice to have that out of our sports for a while.
Yeah.
So, did you give an acceptance speech last night?
I did. I gave it to the media because it was so late by the time Utah released numbers. We had an election night party in Cedar City. There were a lot of people there. It was high energy. It was a fun crowd. Most of them had to go home before the results came out. So I just gave a speech directly to the media that was there and my family that was still hanging around. And I just said, thank you. Thank you to the voters for trusting me with a full term. And I said that I'm really excited that we're going to have Trump in the White House and we're going to be working on rolling back these unnecessary government regulations and streamlining the federal government and making Americans more free and more prosperous so that you all can live lives unencumbered by the government. And I really believe we're at a moment where we're going to do a lot of that, and I'm excited to be part of it.
Do you think, just your opinion on this one, Elon Musk will somehow land an appointment from President Trump and start paring down some of the bloatedness that is the federal government?
Trump says he's going to get Elon Musk involved. I believe him.
Yeah.
And I think we could use an outside perspective. I also think Congress has a lot of ideas about how to do this. And when we have the courts and Congress and the president aligned, we can get a lot of things done.
Nope.
And even Democrats at this point are willing to admit that we have a bloated federal government that isn't actually protecting Americans. It's hindering our progress.
Yeah.
And so it's time. It's time to start taking it apart.
Now, it looks like Republicans have won the presidency. Republicans have won the Senate. And we're way ahead in the House of Representatives, but a lot of races haven't been declared yet. Yeah. Do you have any insight on where we're at with the House of Representatives?
Not much. Most of my colleagues who are in these really tight races aren't saying much this morning. And having been in a tight race myself a few months ago, I get it.
Yeah.
You don't want to get out over your skis. You don't want to make predictions. The ballots are all in. They can't change anything at this point. Now they're just waiting to see how it shakes out. We've already lost Mark Molinaro in New York and Brandon Williams in New York. So that's two Republican seats down. I know we flipped one. And so I'm cautiously optimistic about the House, but it'll be tough if we have the White House and the Senate, but we have a really, really tight margin in the House. And that means we'll have to focus on the fundamentals. We'll have to focus on the things that have widespread agreement, like getting control of the border and rolling back a lot of this government overreach. Those are the kind of things we can get done with a really small majority.
All right. Celeste, real quick, before I let you go, any projects, bills, things that you're working heavily on right now?
Yeah, so the things that I've been on your show and talked about, the permitting reform and, you know, cleaning up abandoned mines, the things that are really good for Utah but really good for the nation, that's what I'm going to be really focused on in the 119th Congress. And there's good alignment with my colleagues who also want the government to be simpler, smaller, more transparent, more responsive to the voters.
Very good. Celeste Malloy, the Congresswoman and Congresswoman-elect. I don't know if you can be both at the same time, but you're coming back, and we love it. Thank you, Celeste, for coming on and spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you.
Be safe out there. 9:37 now on KDXU. We blew through a break. We're going to get to that.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show. on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. It is the day after Election Day. Donald Trump is going to be the new president again. 45 and 47. I see the post up there. Move over, Grover. Grover Cleveland is the only president that served two terms non-consecutively. He was president, took 4 years off. He was president again. That's what we're going to have with Donald Trump. The Senate, 51 at least, maybe as many as 53 or 54. House of Representatives, we think, is still going to be Republican favorite. You know, Richard Fritzler came in, Pathway Hospice guy, and he said, well, here's the deal. If the Republicans have the presidency, they have the Senate. If they get the House, then there are no excuses now. They have all the legislation, all the legislative power they need to get things done. And, you know, if you recall the last 2 years of Trump's first presidency, the House was a Democrat, and they spent more time trying to impeach him than they did actually working on legislation. So that'll be interesting. We don't know for sure yet, though, on the House of Representatives. And if it ends up flipping a couple of more seats, it would actually be in the Democrats' favor. And then we would have, you know, a little bit of stalemate going on. So I like what Richard said, though. No more excuses. Here we go. If we get Republicans in the House, the Senate, and the presidency, then hopefully things will get done. Stockton Myers with me today. We were both up late keeping an eye on the elections and a lot of delays. I was surprised, Stockton, how many people were voting in person. Hmm. Now, we used to have precincts, and I think there were 20-something of them in Washington County, and it made it easier to vote in person. But since we've gone to the mail-in ballots, there's only one voting location in St. George and one in Hurricane. And so you end up with, I think Lisa said it was like 50,000 people decided to vote yesterday in person.
Yep, a whole lot of foot traffic on a road where there's construction happening.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know why I'm so fed up about that. It's just so funny. I don't know. But no, it was crazy. It was me and our editor, El Cabrera, were both at my place yesterday. We're eating pizza, trying to relax while we're stressed out over the fact that we had to stay up so late for the results. But we kept getting updates on what it was like at the Dixie Center. And yeah, apparently it was just absolute like Disneyland ain't got nothing.
yeah. I went to Disneyland. I was there 8 hours. I went on 9 rides in 8 hours. That's how, and of course it was the middle of summer and that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah. But
yeah, that kind of foot traffic. Just to update people on a couple of races, Stockton, if you want to handle this, I know John Curtis, we had him on, and Celeste Malloy both won. We had both of those two on. What about the governor's race?
The governor's race, of course, is Spencer. Spencer Cox was declared the winner relatively quickly after the results started coming in around, like, I want to say, like 10:30, 11 p.m.